Welcome to a podcast of It's Focus Management, Not Time Management, Strategies and Habits That Lead to Productive Writing, presented by William Ware, Jr. This podcast was recorded at the 2013 TA Conference in Reno, Nevada.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. This is It's Focus Management, Not Time Management, Strategies and Habits That Lead to Productive Writing. My name is William Ware. I work at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. I work in the university library. We work in a team environment, and I am the team leader for Access Services. And my team is responsible for circulation, reserves, interlibrary loan, document delivery, book stacks management, the mailroom, building security, and starting July 1, I get the reference desk as well. So part of my interest in this has grown out of how do you get long-term projects done given day-to-day realities. The other piece of this for me comes from, I will tell you, I am challenged. I'm challenged by procrastination, disorganization, completion. I have a life mentor. And I've actually been mentored for, I think, 23 years. And this guy is really good because he doesn't say you, because I can't hear that when somebody says you do the following. You are this or you do that. But I can hear I or we. And he says, we are very good at starting, but we're not very good at finishing, are we? You're right. I've noticed in the literature that I read that people seem to come from two places. They'll come from a place of success, and they want to share that success, or very often in what I call self-help for professionals, all these books about success and motivation and writing and academic writing and getting tenure and all of that literature, people often come from a place of failure. So my interest in time management and how I manage myself comes from a place of failure. And so I am not a teacher of time management. I am a student of time management. So, and then the only other thing I want to say up front is it would be easy to go through and read the literature and pick out all the interesting things and report them to you. Everything that I'm going to report to you today are things that I practice. These are things that I do day in and day out and I believe work for me. So here's the bad news. I don't think there is any such thing as time management, meaning I can't manage time. We all get 24 hours. There's no negotiation about that. I can't, store it away for tomorrow. I can't say tomorrow's a busy day. I need 36 hours. Sunday's light. I can have 18. We all have 24. There's no, stockpiling either. And though I say there's no such thing as time management, I use the term just like everyone else does. So I'm not opposed to it. But what I found is I like this term because it suggests I'm going to manage my focus. And since writing up this proposal, I like this one even better. Priority management. I've also found in the literature energy management, self-management, me management. So I want to talk about two sort of overarching things up front before I move on, two ideas. One is work every day, and the second one is taking a time inventory. To write, I must have a big block of time. Old idea. How many of you are familiar with the work of Robert Boyce? Yeah, there's some references to it yesterday. This is really a commonly held idea, I think, by academics, that I need a big block of time to get this work done. How about this phrase? Does this ring a bell? Constancy and moderation? This also comes from Robert Boyce. This is what he proposes for a work model. Robert Boyce is the author of many articles, but he's the author of Advice for New Faculty Members, and he studied faculty. He studied what he calls quick starters or exemplars, people that do very well in higher education, and those of us who struggle. And what he did is he compared those who wrote on a daily basis or found that these people that work in constancy and moderation. And he compared them to binge writers, people who save all their writing for spring break or the summer or something like that. And what he found over time was people who write every day or work every day in moderation produce more, publish more, And he also found, to some extent, they tend to be happier. A lot of his book, he doesn't really call it balance, but it's in some ways, it's about work-life balance. So there are a lot of people out there who subscribe to this as well. Wendy Belcher's book was mentioned yesterday. She also agrees you do not need big blocks of time to write. She is the author of a book called Write Your Journal Article in 12 Weeks. And I have to tell you, when I first got it, I was really embarrassed because it seems like something like, as seen on TV, you know, write your article in 12 weeks. And it, I also think it's mistitled in that what it really is about, it's about revise your article in 12 weeks or revise your dissertation chapter in 12 weeks. That said, it really is a terrific handbook about writing and that whole process and getting an article published. And I was very embarrassed about buying it and having people see it until I looked at mine and realized it was the third printing. And every day in where my office is, I walk by all the interlibrary loan and request delivery books that have come from other campuses. And it's there all the time. Somebody is forever borrowing this book. It's a fabulous book. She also confirms this concept that it really doesn't work for me to save my writing for the weekend, for spring break, for summer, sabbatical, or retirement, that I need to work on it every day. And then I also just finished reading this spring a book by Johnson and Mullen. It's called Write to the Top, W-R-I-T-E, to the top. And they are very clear about we need to schedule time to get our writing done and not put it off for other times. And I think Brittany mentioned Paul Sylvia yesterday. He wrote a book called How to Write a Lot. APA, American Psychological Association publication. Terrific book, and he suggests that we don't find the time to write, that we intentionally allot time to write. The other thing I want to talk about up front is taking a time inventory. Has anyone taken a time inventory? Oh, shame on you. So if you take home anything today, I found this in a number of places in the literature. It is suggested, and I have done this a number of times, choose a day, choose a couple of days in your week if your days look different, like if you teach Monday, Wednesday, Friday or something, do a Monday and a Tuesday, and track everything that you do in the day. Time you start, time you finish, what you did. And I mean everything. I get to work, I logged on. I put my milk in the refrigerator. I unpacked my stuff. I checked the weather. I always check in with my staff in the morning. Start time and a finish time. Go to the restroom. Everything. And the reason why I do everything, like go to the restroom, which you know ought to be a 4-minute trip or something, but I might run into a colleague who I talk to for 20 minutes or 40 minutes. And I want to track that. And what I'm looking at is I really need a picture of how I spend my time. So it's very similar to if you've ever done one of these weight loss things where you write down everything you eat, which is really embarrassing because, I'll eat 3 cookies, but I'll lie to myself and call it 2 because they were small. or if you've tracked your spending, like every time that you spend $4 at Starbucks and you write that down and then you look, where does my money really go? It's very much like that. So here's the time inventory. I don't expect you to be able to read this, but the point is granularity. So it's the end of the day down here at 5:24. I spent 4 minutes on calendar and email. 5:29, I spent 4 minutes staff check-in before I went home. 5:33, 7 minutes cleaned up, packed. 5:40, shut down. I mean, just everything I do throughout the day, and the point of this is, I have a start time, a finish time, how much time I spent, and what it was, and what I'm looking at is how I spend my time. So Facebook, I am intentionally not on Facebook for several reasons, privacy being one of them, but it's a time waster. It's a huge, huge time suck. And everybody's probably got their own list, but it's worth thinking about. I love loading things into my Amazon cart, and I know that I'm not alone in that. You know, how many 80s music CDs do I really need? But I like to load them in there. Or what's on sale at Joseph Bank today? Or I'm going to watch another video on the Weather Channel. I mean, how many tornadoes can I watch? and everybody's got their own group, and they're huge time wasters. So here are, I have actually 11 recommendations that I'm going to try to run through. I have too many slides, as always. Establishing goals. This is a paper and pencil exercise. So if this was a workshop, I have a proposal to do this as a pre-conference for the Association of College and Research Libraries, 4-hour time slot. There would be many hands-on activities, which we don't have time for today. But goal making is a paper and pencil exercise. What drives me? What do I want to get out of life? What do I want to do? Fritz wrote a book about getting things done, and he talks about getting the right things done. And so for me, I'm a tenure-track faculty member. What are the right things? Research, presentation, publication. It's not Facebook. Best advice I've ever had about setting goals is this interesting thing. This came from Brian Tracy, to write your goals in the present tense. So rather than saying, I would like to lose 20 pounds, you say, you go out 5 years or go out 10 years or go out to retirement age or some other place in the future and put the goal in present tense. I am at a healthy body weight. I'd like to quit smoking. Go out 10 years. I am a non-smoker. I don't understand what's so magic about that, but there's something about claiming it that is quite amazing. I'm very interested in library administration, so rather than saying, I want to move into library administration, I'm going to go 10 years out and say, I am the dean. And I just love that approach. No science behind it at all. So this is Laura Stack, who I think she has a new book out, but she wrote a book called Leave the Office Early. And it's a time management book. A lot of these things I read, there's no rocket science there. There's nothing new there. It's a question of application, how I spend my time during my workday. I have a career mentor named Jean who says, I need to read the literature outside of my discipline. There's another takeaway. It's a beautiful thing for me. I read a lot of business success sort of literature because there's a lot out there about how to get things done that we're not finding in our own literature, and it's enormously helpful. So she talks about, you know, focusing on, setting goals will help me focus on the activities that I really need to get done. Number two, go public. So this is from Paul Sylvia. Get a whiteboard. Put your goals down on a whiteboard. And what this does is you're showing other people what you're trying to get done, and it creates some level of accountability. I'm admitting I want to do this. So I'm telling other people, which is creating some obligation because they'll ask, how's that book coming along? And I hate to be embarrassed. And so I want to be making progress. I do have a whiteboard in my office. I don't expect you to be able to read this either. But I fill it. And in part, it's goals. In part, and these are things I'll be talking about, in part, it's breaking large projects into smaller tasks. It's a to-do list. David Allen, who wrote Getting Things Done, I believe it's David Allen, who talks about a next tasks list. So for all of my projects, and I have too many on the stove all the time, what's the next thing I need to do for each one, rather than be overwhelmed? What's just the next, like, you know, finish reading that article or revise the abstract or whatever the next piece is. So this is from this spring. I just had an enormous amount. I had a really big service project this spring, which sucked up a lot of time. But I had an annual review. I had a mid-tenure review. I was reading a book, so I was checking off the chapters. I had an evaluation to do. I had local arrangements for a conference. I took a course online. I fill in at the reference desk. I just write all of this stuff down. It sends a message that I am, in fact, busy, which is also very useful. Two of my colleagues were in my office one day, and there's a table and four chairs because we often meet in my office, and they're looking at this, and they say, how do you get all this stuff done? And I say, I'm Superman! I'm not really. I'm overcommitted. I'm way overcommitted. Number three, determine priorities. So I have short-term goals, and I have long-term goals, and the key for me is I need to figure out the pieces of these and what kind of order they're in. I understand first things first, but I'm really good at doing 27th first. You know, like if I have something really awful that needs to be done, I think you talked about this yesterday, I will clean the shower, you know, rather than do something that's due. I love the nodding head thing. This is Brian Tracy. Anybody read or listen to Brian Tracy? Do you know who he is? He's one of these success gurus. Lots of audio in the public library. And he is a no-nonsense, here's what you need to do. You need to write these goals down. He's good at numbering. He's good at lettering. Here's number one. Here's A, B, and C. Go do this. I love Brian Tracy. I've listened to many. I've just started to read this one. I shouldn't say this on tape, but his books are all the same. It's all the same message, so it doesn't really matter which one. This seems to be very good. I like Flight Plan. I would recommend that one. So I'm going to revisit this time inventory. So my first four columns were the times and the task. And then I might want to identify what type of work it was. Was it a writing project, access services? Did it have to do with work? Was it personal? I could grade them or I could rank them, but the point is that I want to sort them out and look at what's useful, what's not useful, which tasks and what things am I doing during the day that actually contribute to my long-term goals. So if I have goals about finishing a book or writing an article or writing a grant proposal, what things am I doing that actually contribute to that? What things am I doing that don't? So what's the point? To go back to this thing about somebody like Robert Boyce who recommends constancy and moderation, recommends brief daily sessions, and we'll talk more about writing every day. The idea that I don't have time to write. There are all these people who are advocates for writing every day, Tara Gray, Carrie Ann Rockamore, Robert Boyce, Paul Sylvia. I'm busy, I don't have time to write. But when you do an inventory and you look at, I really just spent 20 minutes talking to so-and-so, or I spent 40 minutes on Facebook, or I spent half an hour on Amazon or something, I have time. I have plenty of time. Time, not having time is really not my problem. It really is how I use it. So breaking large tasks into small tasks, this comes really for me from Carrie Ann Rockamore. She talks about the key to completing long-term projects is to identify component parts. So I need to break these large things down into smaller pieces. I think of them as small, doable pieces. What things can I do in one sitting or in several sittings? Johnson and Mullen essentially say the same thing. The act of writing for publication is such a challenge that it must be broken down into digestible elements. Next task list. So that, again, David Allen is from Getting Things Done. What I need to do is figure out what the steps are in the process for the project that I'm working on. So on any given project that I have, I pretty much know where I am. So I can pick it up and know I'm going to finish reading that article today, or I need to finish revising that section. To-do list. Are there any list makers? Oh, cool. I did this at a state library conference, and this got tweeted because I asked everybody, are there any list makers here? And it's full of librarians. And, of course, every hand goes up in the room because, you know, we've been list makers and organizers, like, in the womb. Here's what I'm going to do when I get out. and I make a list every day on the back of an envelope. It's weird to be away and, like, not have stuff to do. I find this very disconcerting when I'm somewhere. I actually should probably, like, make a list anyway. So it's pretty normal to do things like this. But tell me if you do things like this. I just add that to my to-do list, you know. How about that one? Get that done. Here's my favorite. Make a schedule. Brittany talked about this yesterday as well, and this is a really important one. Paul Sylvia is a huge advocate of this. Making a schedule is the secret to productive writing. Making a schedule and sticking to it is the only way. There is no other way to write a lot. It will make you a productive writer. All right, I got it. There's more. Make a schedule and stick to it. And my favorite one, even the dimmest reader has discerned this book's simple message. If you have not read his book, he's really very, very good. This also comes from Carrie Ann Rockamore, mapping your tasks to your calendar. So if I know, for example, I need to revise an abstract or revise a proposal, that I actually put that right into my Outlook calendar as an appointment. This is one of the things that I do not do, and here is the way that I do it. I map the projects. So I simply block out the time for the projects, not the specific thing. I'm just not that organized. I would love to be that organized, but I'm not there yet. So what I do, and here's William's world, here's my ugly calendar. It's what I need to capture for one of these things is what the calendar looks like before the week has happened, and then show you what it looks like after the week has happened, because they don't look the same at all. So what I would normally do is, I don't roll into work until about 9:30, and I don't go home until about 6 o'clock. I'm checking my email and doing all of that stuff in the morning. Although people like Julie Morgenstern wrote a book called Never Check Your Email in the Morning, people advocate for write first. Write first. Do not check your email. Do not check your email at home. Don't do any of that. I don't do any of that anymore. I have to do it at work first because I'm in charge of security, and I don't want to be blindsided by the dean and have the dean say, hey, what was that ambulance here for last night? I don't know. I'd better know because it's my job. But then I go right into writing, and I write in the morning. Pay yourself first. I'm a big advocate for that. So do the work I most need to do in the morning. So I usually write between 10 and noon. I block out my lunch because other people will take it. This is a shared calendar, so people will make appointments, and it helps me say no, or it looks busy to them anyway. My colleagues, my calendar irritates my colleagues because I fill it, and they're trying to make appointments with me. It's my calendar. No one has said yet to not do this, so I do it. The yellow things are like things I do every day, like check email or work on the calendar or work on a to-do list. The purple things are professional development pieces, like working on a presentation or an article. The orange things to tell you about my life are meetings. People ask me, outsiders ask me what I do, and I say, on a good day, I'm an academic librarian. On a bad day, I'm a middle manager. And I go to meetings, go to meetings, go to meetings. I work the reference desk occasionally. The blue, little blue pieces are my actual job. I don't do much of it. I'm a hands-off boss. They come get me when they need me. This all goes to pieces so easily because I'm in charge of emergency procedures and security issues in my building, and I work at an urban institution. And so we have rules there, like if you fall down in the building, we call the ambulance. And it's just human nature. You know, people get sick and fall down or fall on something, or we've had people fall down the stairs, and human nature. I'm okay. And, you know, the police come and the ambulance comes and all this, you know, all this stuff is going on. And it's so funny because medical people are not, like, patient and kind when this kind of stuff happens. You're okay. Would you stand up? They can't. You know, but they've said they're okay. And, you know, somebody will lean in at, like, 10 minutes after 10 and say, somebody's fallen down on 4. I get back to my office. It's lunch. You know, so whatever, my day is like that all the time. Whatever I thought I was going to do is just shot. We had one of these campus gun incidents recently. So, you know, we had a lockdown for an entire afternoon. We had a chemical spill. It was actually somebody huffing, I think, in the building. But there was a lot of odor in the air, and it smelled flammable. We were locked out for hours. And so my day just, so I can plan, but I plan the plans, but I can't plan the outcomes. I'll talk about letting go at the end. So the question was, how do I cope with that? With a sense of humor and an acknowledgement. Carrie Ann Rockamore talks about in her book about, I can't think of her terminology, but the outside things that we can't, or outside things we can't control. So like if you have a sick child, there's stuff that you can't control about your schedule, or an elderly parent that needs care. On the other hand, there are all kinds of things that block my productivity that are under my control. So trying to sort those things out. So when we have an emergency thing in the building and I need to be present for that, I don't have much control over that. But I do when I have time at my own desk, I do have choices about how I'm spending that time. So yeah, some days are just bombs. Okay, so Fritz talks about thinking ahead. Plan, plan, plan. I mean, I really need to make this happen, and I need to do it proactively. Carrie Ann Rockamore talks about having a Sunday meeting. I don't do it on Sunday. I do it on Friday afternoon. It's a meeting with myself. Most of my calendar is already filled in advance, but I fill in the rest of it. I plan the coming week. And that's from Laura Stacks, just a phrase that I love, plan your work and work your plan. Again, pay yourself first. So when I'm planning my week, I need to allot time for writing, not find time for writing. and then Johnson & Mullen. It is so funny. Teaching is scheduled, meetings are scheduled, office hours are scheduled. We need to schedule our research projects, writing projects, presentation projects. And it's ironic that the most important activity in the Academy as far as tenure, promotion, recognition in the field are concerned is also the most invisible and haphazardly scheduled, which is just, there's no one standing over you saying, you know, get that, schedule that, and get that work done. Though I had a dean who greeted me every day. I would say, hi, Rick, how are you? And he'd say, how's that writing coming along? Which is a little irritating, really. Great. We're back to boys. Work in brief daily sessions. I work in 25-minute segments on projects. I usually have three or four going. On a good day, I'll work on all four. So it's a couple hours of work. I have days when I don't get any of that done. Pomodoro. Do you know what it means? What's it literally mean? Tomato. It's Italian for tomato, sure. Or tomatoes, plural. So, Pomodoro technique. Is anybody using it? Ah, very good. Congratulations. Shame on the rest of you. This was really made for the whole Robert Boyce brief daily sessions piece. It came from using a timer to do your work. And the suggestion is 25 minutes. I work for 25 minutes, I get a 5-minute break. I work for 25 minutes, I get a 5-minute break. Four of these sessions, and then I get a 20-minute break. And it's perfect for this brief daily sessions kind of thing that I can work for 25 minutes on a project. And what I really like about the timer, I was using a kitchen timer for a while, I'm using something else, is that I like to look at my email all the time. What if the weather's different? What if somebody sent me a message? You know, I like to go looking at stuff. And I'm easily distracted, really easily distracted. But can I turn off my email for 25 minutes and work on just one thing? Yes, I can. Yes, I can get through that. Now I'm going to get there. Well, sort of. Sorry, there's the explanation of what the technique is. This is what I've downloaded. And so what's down here in this red part is a list of my projects, and it actually tracks how many sessions I work. And there's actually a PDF, there's a book, it's free, you can get it online. And you can track this, and you can track your interruptions and all kinds of things. I don't do that. I really just use the timer to keep me on task. It sits right on the desktop. It ticks at the beginning, and then I can't hear it after that. It turns off. But some people really like the ticking, and they like a real timer, something that you physically make happen. Yes? If you search Pomodoro timer, and the one I use is Adobe Air, so it's Pomodoro, A-I-R-O at the end, and you'll get scary messages about, this is not blah, 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 you know, when they don't recognize the software, but I downloaded it anyway. Not my computer. IT would love that, wouldn't they? So another piece of that ties really into Robert Boyce and using a Pomodoro is timely stopping. Yes? Yeah. Okay, so do be careful of viruses. Yes, I should be more careful. So there are different schools of thought about this. Some people say, once you get going, keep at it, keep at it. I do not believe that. I burn out. So they tried to teach me to play tennis when I was a little kid. And so I understand the concept of diminishing returns. I'm doing well, and I'm improving the first 25 minutes, and it's all downhill for the next 40 minutes of the lesson or so. And so I like this 25-minute thing. I've done my piece. I'm actually done with it for the day, and I'll pick it up tomorrow at the same time. And there are people who recommend leave off exactly where you are, middle of a sentence. You'll know exactly where you are the next day because you have to finish the sentence. I don't lose track. There's a lot of stuff out there about multitasking and it doesn't really exist and how bad it is. This is not multitasking. I'm not doing brain switches every 3 seconds. This is 25 minutes. So it's not hard to pick up where I left off. Track your progress. Boyce also advocates for this, chart, log, or graph your daily productivity. I use a spreadsheet. I have one for every project that I do. So here's my TAA proposal. Sorry. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. How are we doing? Good. It's a spreadsheet. It's day, date, a goal. And now you used to do 45 to 55. Sometimes they're 20 or 25. And I track the time I start, the time I finish, and how many minutes I spent, and did I meet my time goal. And then I leave, in the note field is what I did. And this serves also as my next task piece. Because when I open up this spreadsheet, when I start my next project the next day, I look at where did I leave off. When sometimes I make a note what to do next if I've finished in a particular spot, start, whatever that next piece is. Belcher also talks about this. Plan the agenda for your next writing session at the end of the last one. So I make some kind of note so I know exactly where I am. 10, accountability. Really important to me. This also shows up in the work of Robert Boyce. It's the third piece. It's that piece of when I write every day and I track my progress, the third piece is I have someone that I report it to. So Carrie Ann Rockamore assigned me a writing partner. Her name is Sarah. She works at Duke University in the Medical Center. She's a neuropsychologist. Now, how Carrie Ann knew I needed a neuropsychologist, I don't know. But I got one. And I've never met Sarah, but we used to email much more frequently, but once a week we send each other, here's the plan for the week and here's how it went. And I have two others, two historians at IUPUI who are in my writing circle. This email, I'll tell you about the email format and I need a slide for it. Four pieces. The first piece is, here's what I said I was going to do this week. So I do mine on Friday. Here's what I said I was going to accomplish this week. Number two is, what did I accomplish? So if I said I was going to do 25 minutes on Project A Monday through Friday, then I need to report in the second section. Something came up on Thursday, so I worked on that project Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. And in number three, I report why I didn't get it done. So we had a building emergency, I had unexpected meetings, I was sick, whatever. So I tell them why. And then the fourth one is, what's my plan for next week? And it's pretty simple, so I just have a template and I do the same thing every week. And it's not, for me, it turns out it's not so much that they're not gonna say, hey, why didn't you get that work done? We don't do any of that. It's the fact that it makes me plan my week. And so now I have a list, and I have had some weeks, and I need to do this more consistently, where if I post things on the bulletin board behind my computer, I'm blind to them. But if I print that thing and I leave it on the counter, I see it as the week progresses. I'm supposed to be, even though it's on my calendar's up most of the time, there's something about having that week, the plan for the week in front of me that helps keep me focused. Letting go. So I have more to do. I think we all have more to do than we can do in a day. So this is something that comes from people like Laura Stack and Julia Morgan Stern and others. Clearly, I have way more than I can do in a day. Most of us do. So I need to sort out the classic urgent from the important and what really needs to be done. And it's a hard one sometimes because the dean's assistant, for example, will say, I need statistics about blank. And that's part of my job. That's a top three item on his list. It's a priority because he's got some report to turn in. It doesn't make the top 25 on mine. So there's a lot of things that other people think are important and you know they don't necessarily like my follow through. But I need to focus on the things that are important to me and know that I'm not gonna get everything done. This is something my career mentor helped me with. She's one of these terrific women who I look over the course of her career. She raised a couple of boys by herself. She had a full-time career job. She got a PhD. She wrote a book. She has a fabulous career. She's a widely recognized name in library science. Doing all this stuff at the same time. I admire these people who get so much stuff done. I want to know how they do it. So Jean talked about, she gave me an amazing piece of advice or an amazing, it was an epiphany for me. I don't do everything well. There's something about me that thinks I have to do everything really well. And so committee work is a good example. She says, there are committees I'm on that clearly need my attention support and help. And there are other committees that I get on that I don't need to be a major player. I need to participate, but I don't need to be a major player. So kind of sorting those things out, giving myself a break. There are things that I just let go of. I'll find flagged, old flagged email that had a deadline of, 6 weeks ago. It's not the end of the world. If somebody needs it, they'll ask me again. I'm getting much better. I'm getting better about like throwing stuff away and just not worrying about it. I have colleagues, and I am capable of this. They've got 8,000 things in the inbox. Just insane. And I can't get all this stuff done. People ask a lot of me. And part of it is because I do get things done. But learning to let go, I can't do it all. I'm not Superman, even though I joke about it. So why does all this matter? What does it matter if I set goals and determine priorities, write every day, chart my progress? This allows me to complete some long-term projects. So if I wanted to write a grant proposal or write an article, with a job like mine, or for many people with teaching commitments and service commitments, the only way that I'm going to get this done is if I follow these procedures and make myself work at it every single day. I will get to those places where I want to be. And again, Johnson and Mullen. Productive scholars enjoy numerous advantages and opportunities in their careers, including positive attention from colleagues and employers, invitations to travel and speak, grant funding to do more of what one already enjoys, peer-bestowed awards from prestigious associations, and a sense of gratification associated with making a noteworthy mark in one's field. So a quick story. Someone in my community who, she's not a friend of mine, but she used to feed my cat for me on a regular basis. She is someone who criticizes me because she kind of knows that I quit working weekends, but I've worked many, many Saturdays. I stay way late sometimes. I will put in really, there are days when I will not only pack my lunch, but I pack my dinner because I've got stuff I need to finish. And she's very critical of that. You work too much. This comes from someone who doesn't work. You work too much, and I've heard it over and over again. Well, because she feeds my cat when I'm out of town, she realized last year that I went to ALA midwinter, where we were, Dallas. I did a presentation at LOEX, it's a library instruction conference in Columbus, Ohio. I went to Ireland in May to present at an international conference. I went to ALA annual, I don't know where we were, Anaheim, I guess. And then the summer, I went away for an entire week to a leadership conference. So the same woman said, I've never met anyone with such a capacity to go out of town on somebody else's dime. I'm here today on somebody else's dime. I asked for professional development money and applied and got it. But part of that is I tend to get these things because they know that I work hard. And when I ask for something from the dean, I get it. He knows that I'm not out shopping. I am going to go buy one of those cool Reno Envy t-shirts later. If you haven't seen Reno Envy, there's a store downtown. Envy, but it's spelled Envy. I get the goodies because I do the work. It is so worth it for me. So you have, there's a handout for recommended reading, and I recommend all of these. There's lots and lots of advice out there. Lots of good advice, not all of it is so great. These are books that have worked for me. And questions? There's a pile of handouts in the back. Sure, go ahead, and I'll repeat the question. Go ahead. No, I'll just repeat it.
Do you have any advice?
So, do you want me to repeat all that? So the question is, how do I time my breaks, really? Because timing the work is one piece. It happens to me, too. So the timer that I've downloaded, I get my 25 minutes. I do my work. The timer goes off. I quit. But that 5 minutes is often my transition between closing the spreadsheet and the document on the first piece, putting away whatever I was working with, opening the next one. So sometimes I don't get much of a break. I can usually microwave some coffee. If I go to the restroom, it goes to more than five. I'm careful what I do in this break. I'll give you an example. If there's two ways out of my office, I can go by all of my staff at the circulation desk, or I can go out through the philanthropy library, and I do that all the time because I'm less likely to talk to someone. So I am conscious of that. The downloaded alarm does go off after 5 minutes, so it knows that there's my alarm that says I'm done. For me, I know that after I have looked at my email every morning and before I eat my lunch, I have a finite window. And that window is usually mine. And I've really been pretty good about controlling when my meetings are scheduled. I can't control from the top. So if the associate dean says, you have a meeting, then I'm going. But if I get to schedule the meeting, it gets scheduled in the afternoon because I want my prime writing time. But I'm just keenly aware that it's a short amount of time and that I better use it as best as I can. Some days I'm great at it, some days I'm not.
I think you mentioned it, but could you elaborate a little bit more on what you do to throw some crumbs down at the end of when you finish a project for that day so that you can pick it up the next day?
Sure. Probably several things. So if I'm actually writing something, I will, I have a collaborator where I work in Google Docs with her. She's in Alabama. And then projects myself, I'm usually in a Microsoft Word document. I will write on the top of the document where I left off. So left off on page, 22 or whatever. In the Google Docs, I often write what I will do next, and I write that on the top of the page. If I'm in the document, I'll do all caps left off here. In my spreadsheet is where I usually make the detailed notes that, if I'm reading something and going through something that, whatever page I'm on. It usually works pretty well because I'm in the middle of something. So the problem areas are actually when I have finished something. Where do I go the next time? I don't generally lose track. I will tell you what I like about the spreadsheet piece is not only the keeping track, but realizing when I've had a really busy week and I look at it and I haven't worked on something in 3 days or 4 days or 5 days. I do prioritize these things, so the most important thing usually gets worked on every day, and it's the project that's down at number four that's kind of iffy. I have pretty good recall. I mean, once I'm in the swing of something, of knowing where I am. Yeah. Sure. Kim, are we doing something with these slides? Do you post? Okay, so we'll post the presentation and the audio. Can you read any of that from there? So day, month, date, year, because it takes me a couple years to get anything done. What my goal is for that day, meaning a time goal. Time started, time finished, how many minutes I worked, did I make my goal? And then I also make other notes sometimes, like if I'm interrupted, I will just say, and I end up working 12 minutes on something because somebody's come into my office with an apparent emergency. I will say, interrupted. The question was, is this the log that I send to my accountability partners? No, but where I first started using this was when I belonged to a writing circle at Valparaiso University. You're not allowed to go that far away. Oh, it's not you, it's me, isn't it? I would go to the writing circle once a week, and we had to report how many minutes we wrote. So there's an accountability piece for others there if I choose to use it. The writing circle I go to now, we don't report minutes.
I have a comment and a question. The comment is that I really agree with the breaks, and I know often I think, I just should continue and not take the break, but I think the break does make a difference, and I have a suggestion about the break, that you do something completely different so that you don't go to write an email, because if you've been doing a writing project, you don't write. You get up, go out, step out someplace, sort something, read the newspaper, but different. If you were reading, then don't read something else. My question is, you said 25 minutes. Now, if that's for a writing project, that seems like a very short amount of time, particularly if it's just going to be 25 minutes that day. If it's going to be 25 minutes, take a break and then continue with it. But because writing for me always has a little bit of warm-up every time I get started. And so now we're down to like 22 minutes or something. So just comment on being able to write things in 25-minute segments.
I think 25 minutes is very short as well. I've gotten a better picture of how this works with this collaborator that I have, that we've now worked on several presentations and a conference paper, and we're working on an article together. Because we're online at the same time on Google Docs and write together. So once we've sort of gone through our literature and we're working together on the writing, we used to do 90 minutes. We usually do an hour now, twice a week. And so if we get a paragraph or two done, that's fabulous. Because the reality is, you know, I was talking earlier today about looking for a model article from my target publication and looking at what that looks like. And so how many paragraphs are in the introduction? How long is the literature review? And knowing that I need a 3-paragraph introduction, I need a 5-paragraph literature review, and all of those pieces. And so, no, it doesn't seem like much, but it moves really fast once. So I'm thrilled when we get a paragraph written. And it is slow. But part of it is that picking back up again, that I don't have a lot of warm-up time. I know where I left off, and I'm used to this, and I just go. I don't do an exercise. You've got a hand behind you.
You said you use time goals all the time, and I've done that some, but sometimes my problem with time goals for those of us who are perfectionists is we just keep polishing things.
Yes.
Do you ever have that issue, and if so, how do you deal with it when your goals are time goals rather than completion goals?
Perfection? So I'm still upstairs taking notes on this while the rest of you are finishing your lunch because it's not quite right yet. I wrestle with that all the time. I mean, I will work something to death. So maybe the time goals actually help because Boyce has, one of the slides was that comment about stopping is good because then I go on to other work that needs to be done. So I have multiple projects, and other work that needs to be done might be other work for my employer, or it might be going home. So yeah, the whole process is difficult. I mean, I don't have all the answers. I'm just looking at like what really works for me, and these are the pieces that seem to have sorted themselves out over the last several years that have helped me really get a huge amount done. This I'll tell you, this spring was kind of a disaster because of this service project that I did. But last spring, I finished an article that I had worked on since July 2010, a project that came out in a peer-reviewed journal, accepted in January with finished the revisions. It was published in July. I finished and presented 2 conference papers, national and international. I finished a book chapter, and there was a 5th thing in there too, some other crazy thing. And so it's really slow in the making, but the outcome is just, it's sort of like the same thing. I'm somebody that reads 4, 5, or 6 books at a time, and so it feels like I never get through a book, but then I'll have one of these periods of time where I finish 3, 4, 5. So I guess I don't fret as much about what I don't finish in a timely manner as I used to. And some of that comes from recognizing that the projects that I don't finish or the projects that I, things that just don't get done, don't show up on my CV. No one knows that I was ever working on them and they didn't get done. Only the stuff that I get done is the stuff that people know about. Are we good? Cool. Thank you so much for attending.
Thank you. This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.